Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Perspective. Today we have a really delicious and juicy show for you. We have one of my favorite people on the planet. His name is Stu Zimmerman. This show is dedicated to changing your inner sense of hope and knowing in your life so that you can rise to the exciting needs of our planet today. Opening Perspective is engaged in thought-provoking ideas, conversation, and topics that open up each and every person's unique divine purpose. It is in everyone's divine right to experience the most joyful, compassionate, and loving expression of themselves. And many of us from time to time lose our ability to accomplish this in our daily life. We have moments of grace, but how we expand those moments into a lifetime of yumminess and juiciness is what we're all about here. My name is Zen DeBrook, and I am excited to talk to you today about Stu Zimmerman. You see, Stu founded his own investment firm, Zimco Advisors, which was a registered investment advisor that had $30 million in the stock market for high net worth individuals and small institutions. Now, the interesting thing is I would like for you to hear directly from Stu's mouth about what his life has been like and the changes that he has had. He is an author, he is a friend, and he is a wealth of beautiful, inspiring information. So without further ado, what I'm going to do is go ahead and just bring Stu on, and we're going to talk about his history. Stu?
Hello, Zen, and thank you for invoking so much juiciness.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm thrilled to have you today.
Thrilled to be here.
Thank you. Now, I was looking at, you know, talking about you and putting together an intro for you, but then I realized, you know, you talking about your life and the shifts that you've been through, moving from the business world that you've been in and into where you are now, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about it because it's in your voice and in your heart how that transformation took place for you.
Sure.
How did you move out of that?
Well, first let me start how I moved into it.
Okay,
which,
that would be great.
Because so many of us are socialized to view money as some form of panacea, and I grew up in a traditional Jewish-type household where you're supposed to go out and make some money, so, That's what I did my best to focus on, specifically figuring, you know, if you want bread, you become a baker. So if you want money, you'd be going to the stock market. And so that's what I studied, and that's what I dedicated my life force to, waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, because based out here in the West Coast on New York hours, I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning for 20 years in a row, focusing on making money in the stock market. And it was a great game. It was competing against some of the best and brightest minds in the world. And I also noticed that, you know, some of my investors, God bless them, $100, $200, $500 million or more of net worth to their name. Couldn't help but notice they weren't any happier. Couldn't help but notice how often the money owned them and their possessions owned them. But still, you know, I gutted it out every day for the sake of my family and to feel good about myself and all the things we know, all the wonderful things that money can buy.
Okay.
And at the peak of my financial success, where I'm finally running a fund with my own name on the door, that Zimco Advisors Fund. Zimco is from Zimmerman, you know.
Right.
At the peak of my financial success, my soon-to-be wife, with whom I'd already had a one-year-old child, was diagnosed with cancer.
Mm.
And everything I thought I knew about the script of my life and how the way things were supposed to go, where you work hard, you make some money, you buy some toys, you raise a family, and kind of more or less live happily ever after.
Right.
Well, all of that went out the window. And it was like, call it my spiritual
reality.
2x4, upside my head.
So how did that shift for you?
Well, it caused me to go deeply into asking some questions of something greater than myself. Namely, who am I? Why am I here? And for me, it's what is this thing about money, wealth, and security that I, and not just me, but our entire society has been so ingrained to focus on.
Right.
What is it? Because it's not buying me what my family and I so desperately want.
Which is?
Which was to live a life of health, of freedom, of enjoyment, of what the world has to offer, of what does life, simply just being incarnate, has to offer.
Right, we think if we get the money, then what's going to end up happening is all those things are a natural byproduct.
Exactly. And a lot of us, and I was one of them, was living my life, if only I had that, then I can be happy. You know, which, of course, was a bit of a carrot on a stick, that it was always that pursuit of happiness rather than the presence of happiness.
Right.
Right? If I only had $1 million to my name, then I could feel good about myself. Well, if I only had $2 million, then I'll feel good about myself, you know? And it kept being that form of deal creep. But going beyond that, I mean, it was,
deal creep, I love that. That's a great
right?
way to use it.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's a great way to use that business term.
Yeah, thanks. So I went deeply into what my, you know, to asking questions and really going within and finding out some deeper truths here, because my whole life and my whole family was turned upside down. And I actually went to a place of my greatest fear, actually, is my fear of pain. Because, you know, in terms of death, a lot of people have a fear of death, right? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, take me now, but if it's going to hurt, you know, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
and
pain
and
for me too.
Yeah, and the emotional pain of having a loved one, or being so powerless, of being so powerless to help a loved one other than buy alternative medicine, which thank goodness the money was able to do that, and probably did extend her life. You know, but to
right.
grieve, but to grieve for both myself and my, at the time, you know, 2 or 3 year old son. You know, who would grow up without a mom. I mean, which was so...
Right.
I never thought I could possibly have that as my life script or my life story. You know, so I went deeply in within, and I had a very deep experience where, you know, I said, okay, I'm here alone. My wife went off with our son to her mom, so I had the weekend to myself, and I just allowed myself to feel all this pain, all this anger and sadness and grief and everything. And I must say that I said, okay, I'm finally here. You know, I've been walking around with the coat of armor on. I have to be functional for all the kids and everything else,
right.
and for all my business partners. And then I allowed myself to feel the depth of that feeling. And I must say, I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed to report that I came to understand inside my body, inside my cells, that the only reason I could feel so much anger, sadness, pain, emotional pain, or grief, or whatever, is because I love so deeply.
And yes.
You know, and if I didn't love that deeply, I wouldn't have felt that degree of intensity. And
yes.
So that was a beautiful realization for me, because I came to understand that with all due respect to my beloved wife, that is, you know, who I am and what I am. And frankly, nobody can take that from me.
Exactly.
And in having that deep realization and understanding that goes so far beyond dollars and cents, so far beyond this material plane, frankly,
you know,
it was something I could rest in, and it was a wealth beyond money.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me because I've lost my brother and my mother in 2 different tragic ways.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. The main thing was, for me, I did not realize how richly I had been loving. You know, how richly I loved them until those moments. And it brings a depth into your heart and your soul and your beingness, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. Yes, and it brings death and birth for me, which is the strangest thing. Because
it is a strange thing.
Because I know deep down, and my wife did pass in 2002,
yes.
4 years after that diagnosis, that, you know, her essence is alive as ever within me and around me. And so on one level, it's almost absurd that, you know, the love that we had and her impact on my life, it just continues to grow and expand even without her physical presence. And
yeah.
That doesn't inhibit me, you know, from having other relationships or going about my life. In fact, I just build upon it and I share that love and the realization through our relationship with everybody I'm, you know, as part of me now. And I feel all the richer for it. And so, yes, I miss her physical face and body and smile and laughter on one level. And on another level, I just, you know, feel so grateful for having that incredible experience where she, in many ways, gave me the gift, possibly unconsciously, because she probably would have chosen another path for her own life, living a lot longer and seeing our son grow up together and everything else, but gave me the greatest gift of my own life.
So what happened next?
Well, what happened next is it became really clear that from a sense of life purpose, that I became much more fascinated and much more interested in the kind of wealth that money can't buy, rather than the money itself. So I unwound my business in early 2001, and then 9/11 hit. And as far as I was concerned, 9/11 was a global version of what I experienced personally, where everything, in this case, both literal as well as figurative, that we take for granted as concrete, can go with a snap of a finger.
Right.
Just like before my wife was diagnosed with cancer, I mean, the farthest thing from my mind, and I felt we're, you know, basically going to live happily ever after kind of thing, right? And all of a sudden, with one diagnosis, our life change, you know, life changes forever. Well, so too, 9/11 was just another example of that. And then that inspired me, as well as I viewed as a consummate kind of a clarion call to take some action here, because it's not just my life, but the whole world has a whole range of possibilities in the wake of 9/11 in terms of where we go with humanity. And some of them can be amazing, and some of them, frankly, can be not that pretty. And, you know, as far as I was concerned, that terrorist event of 9/11 is some of the worst that humanity has to offer in terms of killing, you know, just killing each people you don't even know and hoping you could take out as many as you possibly can is something that, as far as I'm concerned, is some of the worst that humanity has to offer. So I wrote a book co-authored with a fellow in Northern California named Jared Rosen, and it was called Inner Security and Infinite Wealth, Merging Self-Worth and Net Worth. And we took a look.
Which I love that title, by the way. That's
oh,
such
thank
a brilliant
you.
Title. I love it. That's so
oh,
great. Inner
thank
Security.
You. Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. Well, it feels good, you know.
Yeah.
And so in the book, we used kind of everyday financial concepts that have a greater than financial meaning. Okay, terms like will and appreciation and trust all have meaning in a financial world and all have meaning beyond finance. And so we took the meaning beyond finance to create wealth beyond money, and that was the infinite wealth. And so that was what we did with the book. And, of course, as you're writing a book, I mean, as you know, Zen, I mean, you're a writer also. I mean, there's one thing to – there's a power in the word that's written in a book. But there's no substitute. There's no substitute for that experience inside your body, right?
It's true.
So to that extent, we decided, well, why don't we start doing some seminars and give people a real visceral body knowledge experience so it's not simply a wishful thought or a concept. So we did that for a while, and it just, for me, it was a beautiful experience. I work with maybe 100 people or so in a number of different seminars, but it just seemed like it wasn't quite the right format for me. And so in asking kind of how can I be of service to a greater good, of something greater than myself, it was almost like hearing one of those George Burns voices of, oh, God, you know, have you thought of the media, schmuck, you know?
Yes.
So so like you, like you're doing right now, we started a radio show almost a little over 2.5 years ago called Inside Wealth, which is, in fact, about our inside wealth, joy for living and virtues and being the best human beings we can be as we create financial wealth. And so that's what I'm up to now with the radio show. We've taken it into a video format with a company called Enjoy Media.
Now, that's what I want to talk about is
Enjoy Media. Okay, let's roll them up. Let's roll up the sleeves and get into it.
That's wonderful. Okay, so talk about Enjoy Media and what you're doing there.
Okay. So enjoy, and thank you for asking, Zen. I really appreciate it.
Oh, so, I'm thrilled about it. I'm totally excited about
you.
What you're doing. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, Enjoy Media is simply created.
Let's spell that. It's Injoy, just so people out there, if they need to find you, they
yeah.
know it's Injoy, one word, correct, as far as
actually, it's two
you.
Words.
Two words.
Two
okay,
words.
Good.
It's like being in joy. Yeah, Injoy Media, InjoyMedia.com. And it's I first named the company that really as the breadcrumb for myself, that if I get lost in the stress and the to-do list and all the things that the muck and mire of life, so to speak, in
yes.
whatever form it is, whether it's in the building of the business or in any aspect of my life, that I can always refer back to it as saying, you know, there is another perspective. I don't
right.
always have to go there. I can actually be authentically sad about something or authentically angry about something. Those emotions do pop up from time to time as a human being.
Yes, of course.
What I'm noticing is just that reminder. For me, it's like a trigger where I know, and this is something actually I learned from my 3-year-old son, who when his mom, my wife, was literally, you know, half passed out on the couch from the chemo, which was so toxic to her system, God bless her, you know, and
mm-hmm.
he is sitting by her side where she hasn't moved all day, and he's sitting by her side on the ground playing with blocks and Legos and going about his business and just having a good old time. And observing from afar the stark contrast between somebody who I adore, who's literally knocking on death's door, to my son, who's just going about his business, finding joy in the moment, knowing full well, maybe not understanding the full depth of his mother's illness, but knowing full well that mommy's not available to play right now, and he's
yeah.
just going about his business. And it led, it was such a stark contrast for me, literally inches away from each other, that he taught me that it's simply a matter of what I pay attention to in any given moment, that it's all there. In just about every moment, there's always going to be something I could look at that's going to feel either deathly or something I dislike or something I could judge or something that's going to you know, kind of take my life force from me. And equally, in every moment, depending on what I pay attention to, there's something out there that's absolutely life-affirming, present,
yes.
joyful, and expansive. So that's, you know, so I named the company Enjoy Media first for me, and then I realized, you know what, it's just not about me. It's actually as I wanted to be of service to people, that it's really what the deliverable is to hopefully our entire audience, whoever they happen to be who comes into contact with us, is that they will have more moments of being in joy as a result of our programming.
Yes, which led to your new programming inside of corporations.
Exactly. So now we're taking this whole notion of inside wealth and kind of reformatting it into a video format called Inner Espresso, which hopefully is kind of fun, light and lively and bold way
yes.
to wake up people on the inside in the context of business, which is an amazing thing has occurred here, which is there's all this management science and data, hard, raw data that the left side of the brain can calculate and understand completely, that there's a huge correlation between having a vibrant corporate culture and sustainable, extraordinary, or certainly above average profitability.
Yes.
And that is something that Inner Espresso really is designed to stimulate and sustain, is that sense of vibrancy, whether it's through communication skills, whether it's through reframing issues that come up so they don't have to be so it's triggering, and there are new
exactly.
ways to go about our relationships, whether it's with our teammates, with our vendors, with our sale, with our
silos. So let me slow down just for a minute. So let's get – I want to just – because I want to put a little context around that. So basically what you do is you provide awakening media shorts into
yes.
corporations via web mainly?
Yes, exactly. And when you said shorts, these are 90-second or less videos. that offer a thought of the day, an example of how it operates, and a call to action with each one. So they're designed to be not just inspirational, which is obviously has great value, but also to be grounded and practical so that it's something that can be acted upon and actually something that can be viewed enterprise-wide so that everybody in the organization can feel empowered, not just the top brass.
Exactly. And it kind of keeps like a nice vibrational, so to speak, not to get woo-woo, but everybody inside, everybody has proven that they've got some sort of level of stress going on, and it does create an energy inside the body. And what this can do is it helps to keep a nice, even keel support inside of a corporation because you're giving a lot of the people the same message, giving them something different to talk about around the water cooler, so to speak, if there is such a thing anymore.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes,
and
exactly.
And developing corporate culture into an awakening and an enlivening state.
Yes.
That produces greater profits. I mean, that's the thing that I think is most powerful is that by doing this, the corporations are actually supporting their profit-making mechanisms.
Exactly. They're actually investing. Yeah, they're actually investing in their greatest asset, which is their workforce. And by the way, it's not just me who's doing, who's giving all of these pointers. These are actually major, like very well internationally renowned leadership coaches and current and former CEOs who have been there and done that, giving this information. So it's not just about Stu Zimmerman spouting off all the time. It's a lot of other people who, frankly, are very well known and have much more credibility in the business community than I have.
Right, right. And so can you give like a little taster of the kinds of information that these CEOs and outstanding coaches are giving people?
Sure. I'll give you one example from a fellow named Gay Hendricks, who's one of our presenters, and you may have heard of him.
Yes, I know Gay. He's in the Transformational Leadership Council with me.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So he has one segment called Keeping Agreements. And he gives a very simple, we make agreements all the time, and frequently, for one reason or another, often due to things beyond our control, we fail to keep them. And he gives an example of, let's say we're supposed to have lunch at noon, and either because I arrive late or for one reason or another, whether it was traffic or a call or meeting extended a little bit late, I get there at 12:15. Now, a lot of people just won't acknowledge that the agreement was broken, which, if you do not, it actually results in less trust between the two.
Right.
Which, of course, disempowers a relationship, whether it's in business or what have you. So his recommendation is the next time you have an agreement, even if it's a minor, small agreement, and if it's broken at all or changed at all, just say, look, I know I said I'd be here at 12. I'm here at 12:15. I'm very sorry, but I want to acknowledge I was supposed to be here at 12, and I did not adhere to
I respect your time. And yes,
exactly.
Please,
yeah, and just doing that is something that, he says 99 times out of 100 is very accepted, acceptable, and keeps the trust flowing between you. And that's just one very simple example. That is something that everyone from the mailroom to the boardroom could find relevance in.
That's really great. Tell me, where did you get more of this this research? Who's doing the research that you found?
Well, there's one group who actually is one of our partners called, it's called A Great Place to Work Institute. And I know, it's kind of generic, but it works. And they have been publishing their surveys and findings in Fortune magazine once a year for the last 20 years. And it's one of the feature pieces of Fortune every year, the 100 Great Places to Work in America. And with Google, just so you know, Google has ranked top of the list the last 2 years in a row. In any event, they have all these indicators that and indices and questions that they ask of employees to help to determine what these greatest places to work are. And it's amazing how often their list of top 100 correlates with some of the hardest financial metrics that anyone would look at to value the financial health of a company. that the companies that are the 100 greatest places to work have greater employee retention. They have more customer loyalty. They have greater revenue per employee, greater market share. Their stock price does better than the rest of the industry.
Is this across the board in any type of industry that's
yes.
producing great
yep.
employees, or is it like, I mean, because Google, you look at their, you know, there's not a lot of competition out there for them, and so, and they've got the best ad business revenue model of anyone, and they've got lots of capital, so I'm just making sure that it's not just a wealthy company, it's everything from a small, medium-sized, large company in all kinds of different industries?
Yes. They're all different size companies. One of the, that makes the top 10 actually is the Nugget, which is a it's kind of like a Whole Foods type natural grocery store, based out near Sacramento, and it's a much obviously a small company, not even public. It's not even, you know, not a publicly traded company the way Google is. But you know, your question also goes to is, you know, is there a chicken and an egg here? You know, does the money come first? And then it becomes a great place to work? Or is it a great place to work and that's why the money's coming in? And I think the thing is you can't have one without the other, which means that as opposed to looking at it as a chicken and egg, which does come first, it's really about it happening concurrently, and that having a vibrant corporate culture does empower financial success, and financial success does or can empower a vibrant corporate culture. But one without the other can really not sustain for an extended period of time. So a company, let's say, can do their rape and pillage thing and make a lot of plunder or, you know, get struck by lightning but be tyrants on the inside, and they can have some financial success for a certain period of time. However, that's unsustainable unless they do create a vibrant corporate culture.
They hit their arc, and they actually lose ground after a certain point. We've seen
that
again and
leave.
Again.
People take the money and run. The
exactly.
best people go off and do their own thing because they get tired of, no self-respect or no respect from the company. They get tired of, abusive forms of communication. Or they get tired of not feeling like
fulfilled.
They have meaning at what they're doing.
Yes. Are you seeing a trend in corporations around the world that are following this? I mean, I'm sure I know that there are some that are not, but I have friends who are top executives at major Fortune 500 companies all around the planet, and I also have a whole group of people that I know that are organizational development trainers and leaders, and I'm hearing that there are secret initiatives, literally secret initiatives, going on in most of the Fortune 500 companies around creating green energy and sustainability within the corporation and personal development and growth programs for their employees and their team members.
Well, it's showing up in a lot of different ways. Now, I will also say that a lot of these large corporations, they're kind of like yachts, you know. You can't steer a yacht 180 degrees and go
quickly.
In another,
it's not a speedboat.
Quickly. It's something that's done slowly and over time.
And change is challenging. It takes commitment to move an organization into change.
It does. That said, the evidence from both sides, because there's also a lot of hard evidence in terms of the hard costs associated with individuals and employees not being engaged in their work. And by the way, there are surveys done by Gallup Management and others and Towers Perrin and you name it that indicate that 3 out of 4 employees in average corporations are not engaged in their work.
Right.
And the
3 out of 4.
3 out of 4 are not engaged.
Yes.
Yeah, that's like the old joke. You know, you walk into an office building and say, how many people work here? About 1 out of 4, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there's actually some truth to that, and in fact, it's at all levels within the organization, not just at lower levels, even at the executive level. There are a lot of executives who are not engaged in their work for one reason or another.
Yes.
And what's interesting is The number one, this Great Place to Work Institute, when they conduct their survey, they have literally hundreds of different things that they measure and different comments that they have or phrases they have people comment on or rate. But there's one in particular that has the highest correlation between how employees respond and whether or not the company appears on the list or not. And that is how employees respond to this following statement: my employer cares about me as a human being.
Mm.
So it's amazing, after all of this science and all this productivity, science and industrial engineering and all the things that go into, you know, corporations spending who knows how much money on and analyzing what it takes to be a successful business. The number one criteria is my employer cares about me as a human being, which I find absolutely remarkable. It's almost comical that people think, because so many people in business really are trained to be in their mind and less so in their heart.
Well, yeah, but we're spending 40 to 60 hours a week at our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if we spend more time in our work world than we do our family world. I used to say, you know, one of the things that we're doing with the internal guidance system and the work at Ahuma Institute is we're developing programs that can take corporations to a new level of awareness, because we feel if people have the opportunity to practice and work on their internal personal issues without it affecting business, but building self-esteem, building leadership skills, the ability to speak for themselves in a confident, powerful way that they can true up with internally, you know, as far as the way that they feel, that they may not go home and kick the dog as much, that they're going to have greater health in the rest of their lives, that our medical system is going to decrease as far as the amount of illness that we have, you know, in the workplace and so forth. So it's powerful that if your employer cares about you, it's almost your secondary and possibly even your first family in a lot of respects. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? You're spending so much time there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's amazing. On the radio show, the first question I lead with when we talk with our interviewees, our guests, is how do you define success? And what's your recipe for your own success? And in almost every case, it ultimately boils down to you got to love what you do.
Yes.
And it's
amazing.
Yeah,
you got to love what you do.
And it goes back to your point, Zen, in terms of, you know, given how much of our lifetime we allocate to being in the business context, you know, it's almost absurd to consider spending that much amount of your life force and energy doing something you don't love.
Yeah. But then, you know, we have a lot of people who are, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for what you're seeing or what's possible, who are engaged in activities with their employment that they are not happy about. They are not feeling good about what their companies are doing on the planet. They don't have the opportunity to or the power to bring this type of research and suggestions and things, at least they don't believe they do, into their corporation. What do we do for, you know, the 85% of the population who can't just up and shirk their responsibilities and go figure out what they, you know, do what they love, so to speak? What do you think? It's possible there.
Yeah. Well, I think it takes a couple of different forms. It certainly takes an internal shift where I think the first step is that people really need to feel within that they are absolutely worthy and entitled to love their life and to love what they do. And for many people, that's a too good to be true. For many people, it's a too good to be true, or it triggers another common belief, well, you know, that's just the way it is. And part of it may be structural to the specific company that they're with that is, you know, doing harmful things to the environment, that is not being of particular service to anybody. But, you know, even the oil companies, for example, You know, for all of the fossil fuel, which I think on a profound level, a lot of us believe that, you know, that's an old form of energy, and that whether it's solar, wind, renewable, or some other, or electric, or whatever, some other form of energy that's so much more efficient, I think we all kind of agree that the oil companies are typically not the vanguard of higher consciousness. That said, even them, if they were completely to disappear from the planet today, would severely dislocate all of our lives. So on some level, they are providing...
Well, no, we would collapse. Our society would collapse. If oil stopped immediately today, our world would collapse.
So I must say that even when I pull into a Chevron along the side of the road where I know that they are, or Exxon, where I know that they're, you know, that they're not doing all they can. They're not doing all they can to be mindful. And in many cases, they're doing their best to squeeze the last drop of money out of everybody. On the other level, when I pull into that gas station, when my car's on empty, I'm actually grateful they exist there. Because if they weren't there, it'd be a long walk home.
Yes, I can agree with that. And I just want to throw in there, just as a little side note, back in 2002, the corporation I was the CEO of, one of our largest accounts was British Petroleum. Mm. And we were a part of their global rebranding of all of their internet properties to BP. And a lot of people believe that BP stands for Beyond Petroleum, that was their new branding campaign. Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting little story. It doesn't. It just stands for BP. However, the internal team, the employees, which are many, began touting Beyond Petroleum. We need to look beyond petroleum. We need to be beyond petroleum. And it was. And BP is a huge organization. They have a whole chemicals division. There's all kinds of other opportunities besides consumer gas and oil, actually. I would say 75 to 85% of BP's business does not have anything to do with oil. Mm. People don't realize that because they see the consumer brand. It's a lot of other noxious chemicals. But you were just saying that people need to, one, discover that they have a right to have an incredible life and have an incredible work that they love. But two, that also is about taking self-responsibility. And since the team of BP, the various employees around the world, began touting Beyond Petroleum, more internal initiatives have been started, and their focus is on actually moving themselves out of petroleum as a business, as well as discovering new chemicals that are not as toxic to the planet. And it's the internal people who decided that they care and they matter and this matters to them that began these initiatives. It didn't start necessarily top up. It went bottom up. And I think there's an opportunity in all of our corporations, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, is if you decide to start caring and you become infectious with that caring, you can transform your department, your little project group. There's a fantastic book called Deep Change by an author named Kun. It's Q-U-N-N. And he talks about how one manager inside of a business division really ended up changing the whole company by being infectious with his determination to shift the culture of his company.
Yes, that's exactly it's a great point, Zen, because that was what I was hoping to lead up to there, with the thought being that even if you're at a company that you feel, I mean, it can take a lot of different possible paths. It's just the truth of it. And one of them certainly is, you could call it making the best of the situation that you're in. And that is that infectiousness that you're talking about, that when you're beaming your light and you're in your heart and people want to be around you and they want to be what you're on. Whatever that is. Right?
Yes. I get that all the time.
Yeah. Now we're invoking that juiciness you were talking about in the beginning of the intro there.
Exactly.
Is that is something that actually can impact your immediate supervisor or boss. It can impact the way, the process. It's not so much, it's what I learned actually, again, from the Great Place to Work Institute studies is that it's less about what a company does and more about how they do it. And so it's
yes,
that...
Yes, that is such a... You are so right.
So it's that how,
so right.
it's that how, if we can bring that love, that joy, whatever your truthful essence happens to be, and just allow that just to shine unbridled in the organization, it's going to have an impact. It's going to maybe it starts with that pebble in the water thing where there is a huge ripple effect. And for some people, it may wind up actually to follow your heart into another location, whether it's going out on your own or to another company, because there are multiple possibilities for, you know, making sure that the environment that you are in matches your vibration.
Yes. And I have a few key things I'd love to mention that maybe people that are listening can think about. One is to start a positive revolution inside your workplace, where just, and you can't do it alone. It takes commitment, okay, to do this, because it takes a little extra energy and a way of changing things. For instance, if you've got a break room where everybody's complaining and they're tired and all they talk about is misery, it takes a little bit of commitment, and what you'd want to do is find a couple of people who are like-minded, take them to lunch, and discuss the possibility of starting a positive revolution of changing what you guys talk about at work, inciting new energy. It really does ripple through everyone when you have positive, powerful communications on your breaks and with each other, and say that you're committed to that. But not only that, is that if you can get away from the us against them, management against, you know, the worker bees, so to speak, executives against the team that is actually producing the work, and only hold the imagery of this is our company, all of us, and all of us need to shift our consciousness, then what ends up happening is you become a safe place for upper-level management and as well as people that are working on every single floor to have these conversations without feeling like you've decided somebody's an enemy inside your own workplace. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
You know, Zen, that actually is a great point, because I think we all know deep down that as we are one humanity, there's no them.
There's no them. It's only us.
Yeah. So
I keep wanting to start this inner circle, Stu.
Yes.
I want to start this inner circle of people that is so exciting and juicy and yummy that other people want to get involved, so the circle gets bigger until one day there's just nobody outside of the circle and we're all in the in crowd.
You know, that actually is one of our other segments in the Inner Espresso series that is just that become more and more inclusive and more inclusive until there's nobody outside the circle. And as you were also talking about how, you know, you get together with your colleagues or coworkers in the break room and everything, and it's usually an opportunity to, you know, kind of complain and everything. Another one of the segments we have is by a fellow named Mike Robbins, where he suggests creating a complaint-free zone for an hour a week. Just try it for an hour, where the whole work area, there is you just don't complain. Because typically, what we complain about doesn't change just because we're complaining about it. And as Mike points out, you know...
No, it grows.
Exactly. And exactly. Whatever you feed grows. And he also said if you ask any very accomplished business person what their key to success is, not one person says complaining.
No.
You know?
Yeah. Is this Mike Robbins who did his gratitude book?
Yeah, exactly. It's Mike Robbins.
He's such a good friend. I mean, he's such a good guy. He's a...
Yeah.
Mike.
So Mike is another one of our players in the Inner Espresso series.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. So how many segments do you have in this Inner Espresso series?
We have right now 11 different speakers. We have about 150 or so segments in the can, so to speak. And
great.
We are literally, it's going to be available to the public in May. And we are expanding our library. We already have our next set of coming soon attractions that we're going to post on the web shortly in terms of the next set of presenters. One of them I can share is Dick Bowles, who wrote What Color Is Your Parachute?
Yes.
Yeah, he's written, sold millions and millions of copies. And he's going to be joining us. We have a fellow from South Africa named Izzy Justice, and that really is his name.
Yes.
Who has taken the notion of emotional intelligence and created a company called EQ Mentor, where they mentor employees at Fortune 500 companies using emotional intelligence as their format and backdrop.
So how does this work? So is it something that your corporation provides for you?
Yeah, at this point, it's all.
Somebody who would love to have an infusion going into their companies on a regular basis to help shift the corporate culture, get a hold of you? Who would they talk to within their own organization? How is this kind of a thing deployed?
Sure. Well, depending on the size of the organization, for the larger companies, we've been talking to people in HR, in human resources, which, by the way, is now amazingly, you're talking about structures now reflecting how people are thinking. It's now being so specialized that they have certain areas, depending on the size of your organization, one that's dedicated to e-learning, another that's dedicated to talent development, another that's, you know, overall ongoing education and training. So those are definitely the areas of you know, within which, for the larger companies that we're tending to talk with as decision makers, to offer Inner Espresso within their organizations. If you're with a smaller company, just go to your boss and ask them. Our website at enjoymedia.com actually has a number of samples for you to view for yourself. And within a few weeks, we're actually going to be offering it up on a discounted price basis for the grand opening, if you will, for individuals who may be entrepreneurs or working in small companies where they get just to take it for themselves. And it can be offered up every day, ideally, or on some other, every other day, however you want it. You know, I'm telling the team here, you know, we're not selling Inner Espresso, we're serving it. So it's really about having it your way.
Yeah, and you know what another idea is? I thought it would be fantastic if a larger corporation who has a lot of vendors could purchase your services for those vendors as a gift.
You know, that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
Because,
in fact, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because it would be as one, there's a great branding opportunity. You know, I have this, it's hilarious how one little thing can lead to you feeling goodwill towards a company. Mm. But the other thing is that their employees get to work with all their vendors. And so by shifting who their employees get to work with and the energy that they're working with, the happiness gene, the happiness bug, you're consistently and effectively helping to have good relationships that come back into your corporation and get infused again. It's kind of like this double whammy. It's really nice.
You know, you're absolutely right, Zen. In fact, we have one relationship with, it's called a VAR, a value-added reseller, where Inner Espresso is, and by the way, Inner Espresso can be completely private labeled. By that, I meaning we actually have like a very brief animation up front where we have like a coffee cup with steam coming out of the top and Inner Espresso forming out of the foam on top of the coffee cup. It's kind of cute. And we can actually have any company's logo on that cup and on the back end have their logo and tagline or saying or whatever else it is. And right now we have a VAR who sells into a couple of the major insurance companies where Inner Espresso is being marketed as a promotional tool for agents to get in front of their prospects and customers on a regular basis, saying we care about you even when your roof is not flying off.
Exactly. I have a friend. This is what's interesting. Thank you for all of that. That's awesome. And I want to talk one more piece because we're coming down. We got about 10 minutes left here. Can you believe how fast that went?
Oh, amazing.
I have a dear friend that's going to be on the show here in a couple of weeks, and he goes in and does creative brainstorming with major organizations around the planet. And he says that, for instance, he was just working with toy manufacturers in China that he was brought in there to help create a corporate culture that would make better choices in the child's products. Because there's not a whole lot of – you think that, of course, they're thinking about – what they're shipping out as far as children's toys.
So he's going to get the lead out, right?
but really, as a communist country, they have not had the same level of indoctrination to safety and health and public standards, and you know, they're just not used to thinking that way. So coming up out of the communist system and into the capitalist system, they've kind of missed a step that we had in the United States with unions and with safety organizations and with people who had the opportunity to auto-correct our corporate, as much as we have been able to, standards and opportunities. And now we're going to be doing it again with the environment, and it keeps going. But they don't have that system necessarily in China. So he went in and did this whole education around how to incorporate that into their corporate culture. And he was amazed at the level of acceptance and desire to be producing something that is an amazing standard, and the way that the consciousness of China is shifting. And the consciousness of the United States is shifting in a very, as far as work and our service relationships go. And I'm wondering, do you see our workplaces in the future? Can you see it becoming healthier and healthier and healthier to where it's actually something that's contributing to our happiness and our health? Do you actually see and in their communications with all of these HR departments and so forth?
Well, I can't say that there's a homogeneous response. You know, it's like everybody is kind of vibrating at their own frequency.
Right.
I think there is a genuine desire and curiosity to explore that. And I think as more and more evidence comes out, I think there are leaders and there are followers in within the corporate movement to have this vibrancy and the happiness quotient expand for all concerned. And I do think that it is going to be leaders that, you know, that inspire other companies, where it actually becomes a business decision that they need to do. It's not just a feel-good that ultimately may take them to a point of greater action. And it is happening. It is happening. And part of it is actually imposed on them that they have to do whatever it takes to stay competitive. And number one for any company is to be innovative and to continue to find new ways to provide greater service and greater value to people, which basically when you do that, you do add to people's happiness. And I think more and more people get it. And frankly, the more that global competition and the more that China and the oil countries may be kind of eating our lunch in some ways, the more the companies have to do that.
Right.
So I'm very optimistic about where we're going. And plus, just from society at large, I think we're demanding it more and more. And when you see the whole Oprah Eckhart Tolle phenomenon, as just one example of how mainstream it is now to explore consciousness, to explore purpose, and to go beyond our sense of our materialist selves. I think that we're in a period right now of radical and accelerated transformation. Are you there? Hello? Zen?
Hello, everyone. I'm sorry about that. It seems that the program dropped me. My phone was still going, and it appears we lost Stu, too. So I'm not quite sure exactly what happened as far as our switchboard. We were talking about corporations and the shift, and I'd like to say that Stuart is doing an incredible job at creating media that is transforming or has the opportunity to transform corporations. Hey, Stu, welcome back.
Yes, thanks. I don't know what happened, but
I don't
I
either. My switchboard just dropped out. So anyhow, I wanted to say we were just talking about changes that were taking place and that it is happening and that it is moving. And one of the things that you had said that really was actually quite opening and exciting to me is that we're going to need to do this to remain competitive.
Yes.
Now that's the kind of competitive edge that I want our corporations to be focused on. Human development and happiness as a competitive edge. If we put as much time and energy into human development and happiness within the workplace as a profitability factor over the past 30 years, we would be in a completely different place as a nation right now. And it excites me to hear you say that that's something that's being taken into account and that'll be moving out into our future.
Well, once again, it's probably going to go in fits and starts, and there are going to be certain companies that are going to be leaders and other companies that are going to be on the sidelines and not feeling safe for one reason or another. And, some people may stick a toe in and some maybe take a step and some people will take a leap. And just like each of us individually.
Yes. And I'm going to go ahead and we've got a caller on the line who would like to call in. So we've got an 847 number. So, they dropped off. Last second.
You scared them.
I scared them away. They were like, wait, I'm not ready. Anyhow, the one thing that I know that I have found in working in corporate initiatives that are in this particular realm that I'd like to recommend for our listeners out there is that try not to be jaded. Corporations come in with programs that they really are intending to have change happen or to be different or to be empowering. And what often they find is that the employees are either too busy, too rushed, don't want to take the time, or they're jaded, like, oh, yeah, right, this is just some fluff that our corporation's doing to pretend to care about us. And if these initiatives are going to work, even the Inner Espresso initiative is going to work, it really is going to take them having an open heart at the change coming to them. Stu, are you still there?
Yes, I am. And
okay,
and you're right. And, old habits, in some cases, old habits do die hard. And we all know that there have been all kinds of executives and leaders that have hidden behind a corporate veil to not, to have personal responsibility for the things they do. And it is changing. And I think it is changing rapidly. And, we'll just see. We'll just see what's possible. And I do know that to the extent that each of us, whoever we are, and whoever you are out there, to the extent that, we go back to that be the change thing, where it does start with each of us, as opposed to pointing the finger at anybody else needing the change. If we can stay in our heart and we can be living our truths moment to moment to the best of our ability and really speak it out in ways that are hopefully caring and non-offensive, because there are a lot of people still living under fear programs. They are.
Yes.
Or scarcity programs.
And get the most out of these programs that you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't spend your time kvetching about how this isn't going to work or it's another silly program. Really look at what the heck's going on and get the most out of it for yourself in your own personal life.
Yeah.
Dip into that Inner Espresso.
Exactly. Dip into the joy factor because,
joy factor.
Yeah, because I think deep down we all know that the most precious gift any of us has is simply being incarnate in this moment and being alive inside of this body for however long we are. So why not make the most of it and have fun with it? And,
Perfect.
The whole business as usual thing is it's an old millennium.
Oh, I love it. So we're at the end of our show today. Stu Zimmerman, thank you so much. You want to just go ahead and it's InJoyMedia, InJoyMedia.com. You can find out more all about this. And if you want to find out more about Stu, I would go to his book, Inner Security. And the second part is slipping my mind.
Yeah, and Infinite Wealth. You don't want to forget that one.
Infinite Wealth. Thank you. You're not about not making money. I know that for sure.
Exactly.
There is a balance and you believe in it.
I do. It's just an energy like anything else,
Yes.
And typically the more you serve, the more greater service you offer people, money is one of the things you get in exchange.
Yes. So thank you, Stu. With that, we're going to sign off.
Thank you. Blessings to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you. It was great fun today.
Likewise.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye for now. All right, everyone. So I'll be talking to you next Wednesday about men, women, leadership, and power. I'm so excited to be having this conversation. It will be me live on the air, and then we'll be coming back with a dear friend of mine, Rob Evans. So I look forward to being there with you and talking to you then. Goodbye for now.